Hey, I'm Eric Torenberg, and welcome to another episode of Maker Stories, where we explore what makes the makers, what drives them, what they're scared of, how they make sense of the world, and everything in between. This week's episode is with Mitch Kapor. Mitch is an incredibly successful operator, perhaps best known for founding Lotus, and an investor as well, having founded Kapor Capital, which focuses on tech startups that have strong social impact. This episode, we talk about Mitch's come-up story, the world of impact investing and how Kapor measures impact, the ed tech space, the role of government in tech, and much more. This interview was recorded last year at the Launch Festival. All right, here's Mitch. Mitch, you came in from, did you come in from DC?
No, Oakland.
Awesome. How's it going?
Great. Happy to be here. Thank you for
having me. We have extra time for this talk. I've been super excited about it for a while. Now, you run Kapor Capital, but give a brief background of how you got to what you're doing right now.
So back in the Paleolithic era, I started a company called Lotus. We did Lotus 1-2-3 spreadsheet, hyper-growth company of its decade, up to a couple $100 million out of nothing, and lived through all that. Have done a bunch of other things, co-founded the Electronic Frontier Foundation 25 years ago, keeping the net free and open, founding chair of Mozilla. And for the last 5 years or so with Kapor Capital, we have been ardently pursuing social impact investing. So how do you do venture capital in a way that you invest in companies that are both going to be spectacular in terms of their economic impact and their social impact?
So this has been, and right now we're still relatively early in the dialogue of kind of impact investing, and there's a lot of hiccups and a lot of roadblocks and false starts. You've been doing this for a while. What has done well and what has not done well?
So I guess the first thing is there are a lot of misperceptions out there. For instance, that if you're investing for impact, you're necessarily trading off on economic returns. We don't believe that, and I'll give some examples. The second thing is misperception is that there's a mainstream of companies that do what they do, and then there's some little category on the side of social impact ventures. I mean, our perception on that is that all businesses have impact. Some is positive, some is negative, and it's really a question of where you come out. There's no neutral. We're interested in companies that, as they build their businesses, are actively creating social good. And because we invest domestically, one theme that is super important is closing gaps of access and opportunity, which could be in education or in health or in financial inclusion. So our conversation with entrepreneurs, and this is one of the things that we've learned, is to talk very specifically about what kind of social good are they intending to create and who specifically will it benefit. Because, for instance, if you're doing an edtech company, that doesn't, an education is a good thing and everybody should have access to one. Not all edtech companies are positive impact the way we look at it. So, for instance, if you're making the world's greatest SAT prep online program that can raise everybody's score 250 points, guarantee your money back, but you charge $5,000 for it, and let's say you're actually good for the claim, the success of that business is actually going to widen the gap between those kids whose families have the $5,000 and everybody else. To us, that's negative impact. So we're interested in things that close the gap.
And so when you discuss impact, Is equality a major, is narrowing the gap a major part of it? Is it the whole of it? How do you guys determine impact?
Well, it's a very significant part of it, since we think that the widening of wealth and income and access to services is just not a good thing. It's unfair. It's actually in the long run bad for everybody, and it's undemocratic. It's not the principles on which the country was founded, of liberty and justice for all. So thematically, that's important. But another theme that's very important is what can really create opportunity and what can create very widespread economic opportunity, particularly for groups of people who do not have that. And in that context, for instance, there's an awful lot of good things to say about the companies that are pioneering the on-demand economy by creating tens or hundreds of thousands of jobs that did not exist before, that people can work on their own schedule. And let me talk about why that's so important. Because if you're a working adult and you want to also be able to go to school and complete your degree, you actually want to have a job that lets you fit your studies in. If you're on a shift and your time is fixed, you typically can't do that. And it's one of the themes that Uber drivers and Lyft drivers keep coming back to over and over again. And so similarly, if you've got childcare responsibilities, you want to be able to fulfill those and maybe drive part-time. Now, I'm not trying to oversimplify a very complex analysis of impact because it's multidimensional, but what I will say is we try to be very thoughtful, and we love our entrepreneurs who are thoughtful about understanding the impact of what they are likely to do and how they can craft something that is fair and inclusive. So let's say you have a product you charge money for. Of course. Okay. The question is, how do you serve people, families from low-income communities? And with EdTech products, that's particularly important. Well, there are ways to do that. There's the, for every one you sell, you give one away. There's partnering with nonprofits. There's finding alternative distribution channels that serve everyone while building a business model that can support the sustainability of the business. So there's a whole discourse about how to do impact.
And before jumping into some of your investments in the thesis, I do want to take a step back because it's worth noting. You know, few people have the luxury or earn the right to kind of have the access to capital that you have because you've been successful. And when you did achieve that certain milestone where you could do what you wanted, how did you come to the decision that this was the biggest way in which you could impact the world? Because many people come to very different conclusions.
Oh, why am I not lying on a beach somewhere?
Okay. Or why aren't you doing a more standard VC firm or a foundation like Bill Gates or, you know, else?
Well, I will say in Bill's second act, to his credit, it's considerably different that Gates Foundation is in its way doing a huge amount. In my own case, I always felt I was the least popular child to go through the public school system of Freeport, Long Island in the 1950s and 60s. So I skipped a grade. I wasn't very well socialized. Believe me, there was nothing cool about being a nerd in the 1950s or 60s. It's not like today. And so I just grew up as a total outsider. And it was painful. And I was bullied. And I learned to deal with it better. But it formed my view when I was an entrepreneur and successful with Lotus. I wanted to create a kind of company that even a misfit like me would like to work at. And that perspective of how can we do something that is fair for everyone and inclusive for everyone just speaks to me in a very deep and personal kind of way.
That's amazing. And how do you feel that other more traditional venture capital firms, or what do you think they aren't doing as well, or what would you like to say to them?
Well, traditional VC firms say, oh, well, personally, yeah, I'd love to invest in companies that have positive impact, but my limited partners don't care about it at all. And in fact, if I do anything that doesn't produce the highest amount of returns, they're not going to reinvest. So my hands are tied. So that's a kind of attitude that I see a bunch. I mean, some people just don't give a rat's ass. They say, I had a hard time coming up, and everybody else has to pull themselves up, and I'm just going to invest in what's going to make a lot of money, and when I'm older, I'm going to figure out maybe I'll give it away, maybe I won't. I mean, I'm not talking about those folks. There are some. By and large, VCs I know in the Valley as individuals, by their lights, want to do the right thing, but feel stuck or trapped. And I think there's a way out. I mean, one way out is to point out that there's a class of investments that succeed by doing well and doing good at the same time, when the engine of value creation creates a unit of economic value and a unit of social value. And there are those businesses in, like, where investors, along with Google Ventures and lots of other people, in a company called LendUp, which is trying to bust up payday lending, which is a horrible industry and exploitative. They have an alternate model. It's working quite well. And they make a little bit of money on each loan, but they're also graduating the people who get the loans back into the mainstream financial world with credit ratings. The more loans they do, the more social good they do, the more money they make. So that's kind of answer number one. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a long conversation, but I begin to see some VCs going, well, you know, I'd never thought about it that way. There are classes of businesses we could actually be a little more proactive in looking at, because I'm not opposed to investing in a business doing social good. Great. I believe they exist. Great. Well, why don't you go out and look for some instead of just waiting to see what shows up? So we're making some progress.
And do you think the LP problem is super legitimate? And if so, what are kind of what does future impact investing look like? What are ways to make it more pronounced?
Well, yes, there is a problem in that, and this is so ironic, that the biggest LPs are university endowments and pension funds guarding the retirement savings of people. But there is a culture in the investing world that says returns first, last, and always. But that's under attack. So for instance, there's the giving pledge by the billionaires about giving away half their money before they die. Within that group, there are some super progressive people who come from the tech industry. Steve Case comes to mind, Pierre Omidyar. And they are carrying the torch in that community of the ultra, ultra wealthy and the institutions they control to make the case for impact investing. That it's not necessarily about trading off returns and that there are alternative approaches, but it is a long battle and a long struggle.
If you could create a speaker series in Silicon Valley where all the, you know, the most awesome and influential founders, investors, yeah, journalists attended, what do you think are some conversations that need to happen that aren't currently happening?
Well, one of them is a conversation about talent that comes in different looking packages. And Laura touched on this, but you take a guy like Frederick Hudson, who's the founder of a company called Pigeonly. It's currently in Y Combinator. We're investors in it. It is providing services to the incarcerated. Low-cost phone calls, sending in photos. Frederick is a gifted, natural entrepreneur who is incredibly hardworking. He's a military veteran. At an earlier point in his life, he got involved in the marijuana traffic in a state where it was not legal, or before it was legal, and he did some hard time. That's where he got the idea for this. I think if you look at Frederick, we look and we say, this is talent in a different package. It's not somebody who dropped out of Harvard or Stanford from a CS program, but it's somebody who is passionate and brilliant and hardworking, and there are a lot of people like Frederick out there. But they don't, and I'm actually thrilled that they're in Y Combinator, because that's a real shift, that YC is starting to cast the net much more broadly. But there's a whole set of conversations about who gets funded, what our pattern recognition is, what an entrepreneur looks like, that really need to happen, because we need to blow it open completely.
And what do you think is the intersection between kind of tech and impact investing and, let's just say, government?
Tech and tech investing and government. Well, one interesting thing is there's this genius named Todd Park, who was the U.S. Chief Technology Officer, successful health IT entrepreneur previously who was fomenting a revolution in government by applying lean methods and startup thinking under the radar, but it's really happening. And if you don't know about the work that Todd is doing, it's totally worth Googling. Another thing about, I mean, I'm mostly on tech and tech investing. I would like the government to stay out of the way. Whereas I think in things like education, particularly early education, there's plenty that the government can do. If I'd had one ask of VCs, I would say, for God's sakes, carried interest on VC funds for general partners and hedge funds, let's tax that as ordinary income. I mean, we've had a free ride for decades as capital gains. It's just a loophole. It's skirting the intent. Let's be stand-up men and women, few women on this, and, you know, let's put in our share. So I'm with Warren Buffett. Our taxes aren't high enough.
And what about, so when you look at your impact portfolio, education is something that you've kind of doubled down on.
Yes.
How have you decided to do that, and what are you most excited about in ed tech?
Well, you know, we think fixing K-12 public education in this country is incredibly important as a national priority. Besides it being good for all of the kids in our big urban school districts, what's been thrilling, and I'm actually giving a talk at a conference in a month or two, there are a few companies who have cracked the code on how you can do a little startup that offers something that's used in the classroom. You make it free to teachers, you have very low friction, you understand how to promote a viral adoption, and we've seen four companies in our portfolio go from 0 to 1 million students in a single academic year and get to penetrations of 10 and even 20% of all public schools in the US with a business model that allows an upsell. That, I think, is very important, that we're figuring out how to bring high-quality ed tech, it might be in math, it might be literacy, it might be writing, into classrooms without having to spend $100 million hiring and managing a direct sales force. So that's an experiment in progress, but super promising. Companies like Newzella and No Red Ink and others that have now, they're past us, we did the seed, they've raised their Series A, they're trying to get from 1 million students to 10 million students.
Is there a company that fulfills this gap closing info tech concept that you guys didn't invest in that you wish you did?
Well, let's see.
Uber would have been cool.
Uber is cool. We happen to have been one of the first four investors in Uber.
Oh, my God.
In 2009.
Impact is, investing is more easy when you have the best like pick of the world.
Which was as we were just beginning to think about impact, so we didn't have our current approach, but did sense, and this is very important, that the disruptive opportunities where you take a sector that is fragmented, where the people who get the service are unhappy, the people providing the service are unhappy, there's very little information technology that's used in it, but it's something that tens or hundreds of millions of people depend on. I mean, Uber is the case study that in a short period of time, you can upend that. And so we now see entrepreneurs, I know you didn't ask this question, but
ask it, answer.
applying those principles in completely different fields of delivering services to people, particularly, you know, vital services. And we're going to see some big companies still in stealth that are doing, that are applying a quote Uber model, but in the sense that I was just referring to tackling social issues. That is super exciting.
What advice do you have for aspiring entrepreneurs who also want to do social good?
Well, so I would say if you come pitch us or other impact investors, put the impact in the deck. We often talk to entrepreneurs who don't, but it's there in the background, and we ask them and they say, but we were told never bring that stuff up because nobody will fund us if we do that. And I'm saying the investing climate is shifting so that there are a number of investors that are more social impact oriented and a number that, while not specifically have a leaning that way or think of it as a positive, like 500 Startups, which has done all sorts of good things. And I don't mean just to single them out, but I think now be thoughtful as an entrepreneur, get to know who you're pitching, look at what else they've done, and don't be afraid to integrate the impact side into what you're doing.
Perfect. And beyond education, what fields are there other fields you're most excited to invest in?
Well, sure. We've done a number of things in health. That's a kind of an obvious area because access to services in health is so uneven. I mentioned financial inclusion. So we're not only in LendUp, but we have several other companies that are trying to provide better access to capital to underserved markets. We're in things that are trying to provide more employment opportunities to people, because that's, you know, having a job, a good job that moves you into the middle class is super important. And so we have some things that are not quite ready to announce yet, but we like that sector a lot.
And how can companies like Product Hunt, companies like a lot of the companies in this room, get involved in the conversation and help out in the work you're doing and just the movement forward?
Well, I would say a few things. There's certainly, if you just Google social impact, you'll see that there are sets of conferences and blogs and tons of conversations on Twitter. I would say get into the stream. Don't be afraid to speak up. And look, we all know passion is a critical success factor for entrepreneurs because you've got to be passionate about what you're doing to see you through the inevitable difficulties and hard times. And if your passion is changing the world in some way, I am telling you, you can build a kick-ass company doing that. Believe in yourself and follow your passion.
Perfect. We're going to wrap up with that. But last point, where can people find out about your work and what's next for KPOR Capital? What should everyone look to expect from you guys?
Okay, so I am on Twitter. I'm at MKPOR. The KPOR Capital website, kporcapital.com, is one place to look. Our nonprofit side where and our education programs is kporcenter.org, and that has links to lots of things for further investigation.
Perfect. And what can we expect from KPOR Capital moving forward? What are some of your big goals?
One of the big goals is to continue to increase the inclusiveness in the portfolio. About half the companies now have a founder who is either female or from an underrepresented group. We are look to us to continue to cast the net widely to have the most diverse portfolio of entrepreneurs in the business.
That's awesome. Please give it up for Mitch KPOR. It is an honor
Thank
to
you.
Be speaking with him tonight.
Thank you.